Blog Talk Radio.
I've always lived by this golden rule. Whatever happens, don't blow your cool. You gotta have nerves of steel and never show folks how you honestly feel. I've lived my whole life this way. For example, take yesterday. I breezed home happy, bringing her my pay. Her note read, so long, sappy, I have run away. I threw myself down across our empty bed, and this is what I said. But I was cool, so I went for the road. It had an all-night bar, wound up so loaded I tore up my car. The judge threw the book at me, and when I read his sentence, there I said, she's the only one I have to thank. And I found her and pulled my gun and fired point blank. The shot whistled right straight past that woman's head and killed my hound dog dead.
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book at .com. One quick comment. Did you see the Democrats yesterday as they stood on the stage to take more bows? Did you notice this? Yesterday was Ash Wednesday. Did you notice that Joe Biden had to show everybody his ashes? Yeah. You know how he got those ashes? He put them on himself when he was down in the boiler room at the church they threw him out of. Yeah, man, I'll tell you, hypocrites. I've got a picture of two hippopotami kissing, and I call them hypocrites. And that should be the symbol of the party of death, the Democrat Party. I'll give you a little heads up on an issue. Somebody I know how to give up caring for the dying to perform a jury duty. And so she went today to line up for the jury pool, and it was a big lawsuit. Somebody got bit by a dog, and they wanted a trial by jury. And she was disqualified because she has that Mother Teresa look. And guess who they picked? They picked American citizens who had foreign accents and didn't understand English too well. How's that? Yeah, you're in good shape. Your country's right there for you. And I'm watching Obama set the deadline for the pullout of Iraq. And now that he's told Al-Qaeda that we'll be out by such and such a date, I'm sure on the way out they're going to kill a lot of Americans. And knowing that the Democrats won't stop running. And that's how that's going to end up. In the meantime, let me open the show. And let me see if there's anything else, news of interest, that I want to tell you. I was impressed with a young man who came to my place today. And he's worried about his job. He works on Wall Street. And he deals in bond trading and selling stocks to phone sales to customers. And I said, what could a guy do? What could a guy make if he really was at the top of his game where you are? He said, well, I know guys that make $1 million, $1.5 million a month. Oh, man, isn't that something? And he's down in the dumps because he only made $70,000 last month. And he's a young guy. And he said he works for a small firm of 15 people. And they don't even have college degrees. They all got GED diplomas. I know you can't believe that, and neither can I. But why would the guy lie to me? And he paid for an air freshener with a $20 bill. And he counted the change. So hang in there, and we'll give you a little tune to make your day. We're going to run a show tonight. We're going to go an hour and 20 minutes. By the way, I caught Cousin Brucey on Steve Malzberg, and he was on WOR, and he's fundraising, and he's doing a real nice job. And he played a tune, and a tune called Love Potion Number 9. And you know what? He played the oldest one known to the American rock and roll aficionados. He played the 1956 The Clovers. How's that? You know how many people would know that? There's two versions of Love Potion Number 9. The Coasters have one, and that one is 1960-something. But the earliest one on record is The Clovers, 1956. So I'm going to give you a Clovers tune, and and sadly today I had a mother in with one or two children, and she was buying a set of booster cables, and a set of booster cables automatically tells me that there's no man in the house, and I was right. When a woman buys booster cables, you know there's no man in the house. And her man walked out after 15 years. He just upped and left. Isn't that great? Isn't that fantastic? Unbelievable. And she paid with a credit card, and it was declined. And her daughter is living the experience. Unbelievable. I might as well open a charitable organization. I haven't got the heart to charge my customers. I know times are tough. Hang in there. When you vote for a candidate because he's good-looking, or she's good-looking, ask yourself this question.
Like an angel.
Hi, you boys and girls, and welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book.com. It's time to get the book because the revolution is coming. And the title of my dissertation tonight is Commies in Suits. I abused myself last night and watched Looters on Parade. All the people who voted to burn my flag and kill kids had front row seats at the Camo Pinko Wacko Roundup. Loser McCain sat next to the commie from Maine. Susan Tom Collins. You would need a big drink after watching her betray her party. Let me say something about that. Get rid of all of the repuppies now because we got a big fight coming. And we got to take our country back. And you're not going to take them back with Susan Collins from Maine and the other Plain Jane from Maine. And you're not going to take them back with guys like McCain, okay, who worships the ground that Ted Kennedy, or I should say the pond that Ted Kennedy swims in. Yeah. So... And don't forget Match McConnell. He sat next to a fellow flag burner from the Party of Death. Oh yes, Repuppy Penguins vote to burn flags too. Eight of them crossed over to help the Democrats make flag burning the law of the land. And in, to quote Chuck Schumer, child murder is settled law. It was good to hear Obama say he is against torture. I guess he will turn the democratic franchised abortion clinics into daycare centers. Two big lies have been modified. I don't know if you caught it, but they've changed the two big lies. One, the 10-year plan to wean America away from big oil is now a 3-year plan at $15 billion a year for big wind. Better to buy a $15 billion worth of crude oil this year at $40 a barrel than to watch it go back to $200 a barrel when Iran blocks the Gulf with Iraqi bodies. And the other lie is we will close Gitmo and release our fellow Democrats back to Afghanistan just in time to kill Americans again. And my favorite is we will negotiate with our enemies just like in the Bible when the terrorist lion will lie down with the American lamb until lunchtime. I looked out over the crowd and all of the usual flag burners were there. John Kerry, back from his tour of Damascus, where he sat in the same Ottoman capitulation chair that Nancy Uday Pelosi, Bill Bayonet the Baby's Nelson, that's the astronaut with two S's, who wasn't allowed to land on the moon because they figured even without oxygen he would find a way to burn the American flag. And who else? Oh, there was Commie Kucinich. And never forget Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater. He's some of my best friends are Jews. Yeah, I've heard that story before. Sat in during, and all of these guys sat in during the Great State of Israel giveaway. They treat Israel today like we treated Taiwan yesterday. When Kennedy and Nixon were debating, they argued in front of the American people over saving the offshore islands of Quemoy and Matsu. When was the last time you heard anybody say, we will defend Quemoy and Matsu? Yet Kennedy and Nixon swore on a stack of Bibles they would defend Quemoy and Matsu. Now you know what the big Democrat lie is? We never agreed to defend Taiwan. We only agreed to defend Formosa. And Taiwan doesn't qualify because they changed their name from Formosa to Taiwan. Meaning, America is off the hook. Do what you want, China. And after you do to them, you can come do to us. And China tonight is negotiating with Chrysler to get a tank production factory going. You think about that one. You can cry in your Belgian Budweiser. And the guy said to me tonight, that when things get tough, he says, the Belgians bought Budweiser, so where does all the money go? Goes back to Belgium. Yeah. Think about that. Waffle on that. So, there was John Kerry, back from his tour of Damascus, sitting on the Ottoman capitulation chair. Never once did they visit the troops down the street who were having their legs blown off by Iranian-Syrian IEDs. I wonder if Nancy autographed any. And you know what? She reminds me of... She's the Leona Helmsley of the Senate now. Taxes are only for the little people. And we'll tax them too. Anybody that thinks that if you're little, you're going to stay little. You'll never have a chance to get up. You better practice your yes masses. The market dropped 250 points a day before Ramalama Ding Dong spoke. So who bought all the shares the next day using the stick it to us package money? If the market plummets again the day after, my guess is it was Senator Soros. And the market is down 80 points today. Or 70 points. Interesting, huh? No mention of oil drilling, but Der Kaiser of California needs $42 billion for his share, and he intends to take it from 49 states. Paying San Francisco welfare. Yet this same a genius could have $42 billion tomorrow just by uncapping the offshore oil pumps. And I heard this morning that $800,000 will be spent to corral flies in Nebraska, all three of them, $40,000 to stop bullying in Montana where kids live 100 miles apart, $200,000 to convert combat boots into ballet shoes. Whatever happened to swords into plowshares? In the audience last night was a Marine hero, and they wouldn't even mention his name. They gave him one of these. Ever see Rodney Dangerfield say, give me one of these? That's all I want is a little one of these. Yeah, that's what they did. They looked in his direction, and they clapped. Big deal. Such gratitude. Yet, the same communists flew to Syria in U.S. military aircraft and didn't pick up the gas tab. And they went there to lick the sandals of a Marine killer, Bashar al-Assad, who also kills prime ministers and kills Maronite Christians. Who, by the way, announced after Kerry's visit that he was reopening his Iraqi chemical warfare facilities in Syria that he was holding for Saddam. But Saddam couldn't come for the grand opening because he had his neck stretched by Bush the Merciful. That was one for you, George. You did that one good. You got them all. You got all the Husseins. Except Barak's Hussein. But there'll be time for that. To summarize, Mr. President, you're out of your little league, and all the smooth talk will fail will fall on Bin Laden's deaf ears as he completes the takedown of America while you fritter away with going nowhere negotiations. All the hyenas will come in for the kill. You're out of time and you don't know it. The Russians are arming the Iranians, and the flag that you voted for as a senator, Mr. President, now drapes American coffins on your watch, starting with number 562 in Afghanistan. Bush left us up to 561, so everybody from 562 on is your head. What good is a 401k if you don't have a country? Distance yourself now from tax cheats, flag burners, and baby killers who hate this country and believe they can mold it in the image of an immoral Hollywood-style Karl Marx. Welcome to Pop, the party's over party. Throw your blame list in the garbage and get yourself a finger-pointing-at-yourself glove. I must tell you that I look down on any government official who does not have a DD, a 214. Sorry, it is not a party thing with me, it is a God and country thing with me. If you want to make of my day, fire every ambassador and replace them with Purple Heart holders. Then you can be my president. Sadly, most politicians are in the service, the lip service. But there is always hope. Saul got the message in Damascus. Never forget, a lot of babies executed in Democrat chop shops are black. Say no to King Herod centers, and never forget a ghetto used to be a poor neighborhood before the liberals brought drugs in. Now there's a war to win. Your only friend left in America, Abu Tam, the American fundamentalist. I'll come back after a song, boys and girls. Hang in there.
Pao, 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 pao
that song is all sung by gringos. How do you like that, huh? I got something that may be of interest. It's the code names for politicians high up in the pecking order. For example, vice presidents of the United States, Nelson Rockefeller, his code name for the Secret Service was a Sandstorm, and his wife Happy was known as Stardust, and Walter Mondale was Cavalier, and Joan Mondale was Cameo, and Dan Quayle was Scorecard or Supervisor, and Marilyn Quayle was Sunshine. And Bill Clinton, his code name was President Pinocchio Pants. And Hillary's code name was the Book of Revelation. No, her real code name was Evergreen. And Bill Clinton's was Eagle. Yeah, Eagle, all right. And when he stretched out his wings, watch out. Who else we got here? I thought we had a whole bunch of them. Michelle Obama, her code name is Renaissance. And Melania Obama, her name is Radiance. And Sasha Obama, her name is Rose Dance, Rosebud. And Henry Kissinger, his name was Woodcutter. Eugene McCarthy, his name was Instructor. Teddy Kennedy, his name is Sunburn. It should be Chappaquiddick Seal. Oh boy, wait till you see when he passes. Wait till you see the Democrats. Wait till you hear the lamentations. It's going to be sickening. You will think that Farrell died. Too bad they couldn't bury the Senate with him. Wouldn't that be great? John Kerry is Minuteman. Yeah, that's how long it took him to go to the report to sick bay. I have shrapnel in my hiney. No, I have shards. And Teresa Heinz Kerry, her code name was Mahogany. And John McCain, his is Phoenix. And Cindy McCain is Parasol. And Sarah Palin is Denali. And Todd Palin was Driller. How's that? Driller! Driller! Matter of fact, too bad we're not drilling for oil. And let me tell you once more. I'm going to say it again and again, because I don't want to be an I told you so guy. If we let the price of oil get above $25 a barrel, we're asking for trouble. We're asking, we'll be killing our own economy. And somebody told me today that they called me up and said, guess how many Chinese factories have closed since this capital upheaval? And I said, how many? He said, 70,000. And there's 20 million Chinese out of work. How's that? So, Todd Palin is Driller. That's good. I like that. And Denali's good, too. That's the forest up there. That big forest. Here's one. Zygmunt Brzezinski, his code name was Hawkeye. It should be S-Head. Here's a communist that fled communism, only to bring it to the United States. He made a speech the other day, and he's worried about the people in the streets killing each other. He's not worried about it. He's hoping for it. That he's another wishful thinking Democrat. And who else we got here? Scott McClellan. His code name is Matrix. His code name should be Rat Boy. Yeah. Unbelievable. Al Gore's, his code name is Sundance. It should be Mr. B, Super BS Man. Dick Cheney, his code name was Angler. It should be Shotgun, shoot him before he run now. Lynn Cheney, author, because she writes books. And Al Gore's wife, she didn't have a code name. Joe Biden, Celtic. What a joke. Celtic. Yeah. And Jill Biden is Capri. Joe Biden, Celtic. How about a flag burner extraordinaire? When was the last time Joe Biden went to Dover, Delaware to welcome home the returning coffins? I bet you he never goes. And when he does go, does he tell them I voted to burn the flag that drapes that box? Nah. And Democrats commit murder and they call it settled law. You're going to have a fill of Democrats? Obama doesn't have 100 days. He's got 100 minutes. And already he's sticking his foot in his eloquent speeching mouth. Yeah. He's going to sound so good when he goes down the drain. You're not going to believe it. It's going to be like music to your ears. The sound of the flush. So, being that we've only got 3 days left in February, I thought we'd say goodbye to Black History Month and welcome you to Irish History Year. And we'll talk about Irish heroes on both sides of the pond. And I'll just do a warm-up because I'm going to save the best for March. But I'll give you somebody to look up to. And just remember, for every Irish hero that they sing about, we have an American hero that nobody talks about. So, and I'll tell you what I mean by that when I introduce the next song. Hiya, boys and girls. It's Captain Boycott. I'm looking at my Irish heritage and I'm comparing it to my American heritage. I am first generation American. And I happen to notice that Nathan Hale, you never hear him mentioned in schools anymore, I don't think. I never heard anybody talk about Nathan Hale. They never made a movie about Nathan Hale. There's not a song from Nathan Hale. Yet Nathan Hale, as a young man, gave up his life for freedom. The freedom that you enjoy, he paid your dues. He paid my dues. And I just wanted to give you a heads up on who he was, where he came from, and how he ended up. There's an Irish song called The Crappy Boy. The Crappy Boy was a young rebel who was captured by Lord Cornwallis in Ireland, was taken to the gallows and strung up. And the Irish, to honor him, wrote a song about him. And that song you're going to hear. But when you listen to the song, The Crappy Boy, you think of Nathan Hale. Because Nathan Hale was the crappy boy of his time. And the same general that hung the Irish crappy boy hung Nathan Hale. So we were fortunate enough to win our war for freedom. And the Irish didn't win it until the 1900s. So I want you to remember that. And someday when you're in school and you hear some communist professor telling you that America is no good, you just think about Nathan Hale. So here's the story. Once upon a short time, there was an American Revolution, which you don't know too much about today. And that's being deliberately withheld from you because the Communist Party of the United States is waiting till the last World War II veteran is dead, and then they're going to rewrite history, and they're going to poison your mind. You might as well have a little drain plug in your brain because they're going to open it up and they're going to fill it with garbage. And just remember, never forget that you are an American and you have roots, and your roots are embedded in a strong tree, and the tree is liberty. And don't let them fragmentize us, and don't let them divide us, and don't let them play one against the other. Don't let them play black against white. Don't let them play Latino against a black or white. Don't let them play Chinese against Puerto Ricans. Don't let them divide us, because that's their game. Their game is to divide us and enslave us. And as long as we're united, we'll survive. And the day we are no longer united in language, culture, and God, we're in trouble. We will fall like the rest of the nations before us. So once upon a time, there was an American Revolution. A mild-mannered patriot born in Connecticut, now the home of two flag-burning senators, decided to join the rebels. His name was Nathan Hale. He was captured and gave his name and rank and mission purpose. He was sentenced to be hanged and denied the comfort of a Bible. You see how it begins? They take your prayer book away first. And he was marched uptown New York, now the home of two more flag-burning senators. Early the next day, he was led to his death. His body hanging from a tree for some days for all to see. His words are famous. I regret that I have but one life to give for my country. How's that? You're 21 years old. You come from money. Okay, he wasn't a poor man. He was well educated. He was going to be a minister. And he gives it all up at 21. He gives up everything for his country. For the country he can't even see yet. It hasn't been born yet. All he knows is it's a good cause, and he's willing to die for it. You could look high and low today. There's few Nathan Hales. Most of them are in Iraq right now, keeping us from being murdered. And they're also 21-year-olds and 19-year-olds. So here's the story as written by an English officer. Early the next day, he was led to his death. On the morning of the execution, said Captain Montresor, an English officer, my station being near the fatal spot, I requested the provost marshal to permit the prisoner to sit in my marquee while he was making the necessary preparations. The necessary preparations was throwing a rope over the tree. Captain Hale entered. He asked for writing materials, which I furnished him. He wrote two letters, one to his mother and one to a brother officer. The provost marshal destroyed the letters and assigned a reason that the rebels should not know they had a man in their army who could die with so much firmness. Hale asked for a Bible, but his request was denied. He was marched out by a guard and hanged upon an apple tree in Rutgers Orchard. The place was near the present intersection of East Broadway and Market Streets. Cunningham asked him to make his dying speech and confession, and he said these words. I only regret, he said, that I have but one life to lose for my country. There's a little history. He was born in 1755 and he died in 1776. In early July, Nathan received a heartfelt letter from one of his best friends and fellow classmate, Benjamin Talmadge. Always the pragmatist, Talmadge had gone to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to see the siege for himself. That's probably the siege of Boston. Talmadge would later become famous as a Revolutionary War soldier, spy master, businessman, and a U.S. congressman. Now, do you think Talmadge would vote to burn his flag? Do you think that in 1776, Talmadge was even thinking about calling American flag burning freedom of speech? He was fighting for freedom of speech. He was fighting for freedom of speech so he could be betrayed 200 years later by the Democrats. Talmadge finally told Nathan Hale that in spite of his friend's commitment to teaching, the guy wanted to be a teacher. You know what the teachers are teaching in school today? They're teaching you hate your country. And here's a teacher who died for his country. Was I in your condition, I think the more extensive service would be my choice. Our holy religion, the honor of our God, a glorious country, and a happy constitution is what we have to defend. Who talks like this today? No one. We're surrounded by quislings and rats. We're surrounded by presidents and vice presidents who go to Saudi Arabia and go to Dubai and denounce the country that elected them and spit on the people who elected them for money. The only thing they haven't done is shown up at the crucifixion and cast lots for the cloak of the Almighty. I'm going to repeat it. Was I in your condition? Because his friend had a commitment to teaching. I think the more extensive service would be my choice. Our holy religion, the honor of our God, a glorious country, and a happy constitution is what we have to defend. Then it goes on to tell a little story, and it says intelligence information was found on Hale's person, and he freely admitted his identity. He didn't lie, he didn't deny, he didn't call for a committee to investigate, he didn't spin. He said, "I am who I am," and the purpose of his mission. Rumors later flew that Hale had been betrayed, or perhaps only identified by his first cousin, Samuel Hale. In the song you're going to hear about the crappy boy, he was also betrayed by a cousin. Isn't that ironic? Two both died for freedom at the hands of the same conqueror, and two were betrayed by a cousin. And that's not a coincidence. That's fate. Samuel Hale, who was a Tory working for General Howe. Samuel later denied it, and his role in the affair, if any, has long been debated but never proven. A tradition says that Nathan spent the night confined in a greenhouse on the estate, and that he was denied a minister or even a Bible by the provost marshal. And it also looks like, in my doing the little research I did on this, it looks like they never found his body. Some say he's buried in Grand Central Station. He died at 21, surrounded by his enemies, in 1776. No poem like Paul Revere, no song to pass on in 1798, a young Irishman suffered a similar fate in a failed revolution. He was hanged by the same general who surrendered to Washington in 1781 at Yorktown. The Irish remember his tragic bravery in song, and now we share it with Nathan Hale, and it's called The Crappie Boy. And I wrote English American words to that song, and if I find them, I'll sing them for you. If I can find them, I'm still looking for them, but I got them somewhere. So here's The Crappie Boy in honor of Nathan Hale. And just change the country. It's the same song. It's the same spirit. It's the same fighting spirit. It's the same love of God and country.
Was early, early, all in the spring. The small birds whistled and did sweetly sing, changing their notes from tree to tree. And the song they sang was old Ireland free. 'Twas early, early on Tuesday night, the yeoman cavalry gave me a fright. To my misfortune and sad downfall, I was taken prisoner by Lord Cornwall. I bear no hate against living thing, but I love my country above the king. I alone am left of my native race. I will go to Wexford and take their place. When I was marching o'er Wexford Hill, oh, who could blame me for to cry my fill? I looked behind and I looked before, but my gentle mother I could see no more.
when I was mounted on the gallows high. My aged father, he was standing by. My aged father did me deny, and the name he gave me was the Crappy Boy. 'Twas in old Ireland this young man died, and in old Ireland his body lies. All you good people who do pass by, pray the Lord have mercy on the Crappy Boy.
While they're hanging patriots, I thought I would
hang in there, boys and girls, and we'll give you part two of what I've entitled a Lemonology. So, and while we're on the subject of a Lemonology, I'm going to give you a little picture for Donald Rumsfeld tonight also.
Hang you out to dry with this report from the Sovereign Society. And this is some of the top contributors to the Obama campaign. And they've circled three in red. And the biggest contributor, the number one contributor to the Obama campaign, was the University of California. They donated $1,124,000. Second was Goldman Sachs, with $955,000. Third was Microsoft with $791,000. Fourth was Google with $782,000. Fifth was Harvard with $779,000. Sixth was J.P. Chase, who ruined my credit rating there, with $633,000. In the high interest of credit card payments. Next is Sidley Austin, LLP, $565,000. Next is Stanford University, $558,000. Next is Time Warner. Is that CNN? $542,000. National Amusements, this House and Senate is a national amusement, $536,000. Wilmer Hale, LLP, $522,000. Skadden Arms et al., $505,000. Union Bank of Switzerland, $505,000. Columbia Communist University with $502,000, IBM with $489,000, Morgan Stanley with $483,000, U.S. Government of $477,000, University of Chicago $456,000. Well, look at that back. Bill Ayers will bring them twice that amount in a paper bag. Latham's and Watkins $454,000. Now, these guys circled three. They circled Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and UBS. I'm going to check and see why they circled those three, and I'll tell you when I come back. So here is what I found. According to a Sovereign, they are saying, you see, something strange happened on the way to the Treasury. After months of Obama railing against the wicked ways of corporate lobbyists, and never forget, the Democrats have been in power for 2 years before the election of Obama. They have been railroading the country for 2 years. Bush was finished 2 years before he left office. After months of Obama railing against the wicked ways of corporate lobbyists, Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury, appointed the former chief lobbyist of Goldman Sachs to serve as his head of staff. Just wait, it gets better. Geithner's new deputy secretary is a former CEO of Citigroup. Another CFO from Citigroup is now assistant to the president, and one of his assistants also came from Citigroup, whose stock is $1.85 today. I grew up on Citibank. I grew up on banking with Citibank. I got my first business loan from Citibank. I put up stock as collateral to get the loan. Try that now. Another CFO from Citigroup is now assistant to the president, and one of his assistants also came from Citigroup. To finish out the roster, a member of Obama's Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Yeah, he used to work at UBS. But wait, there's more. Geithner's brain trust of unofficial advisors includes John Thaine, T-H-A-I-N, who formerly worked with both Goldman and Merrill Lynch, Gerald Corrigan, another former Goldman exec, and Hank Paulson, yet another former Goldman exec. The icing on the cake here is Alan Greenspan, who exploited his own disastrous mismanagement of the Federal Reserve in a brief stint with PIMCO last year, who also got a Geithner's ear. Which leads us to ask, who's running the ship? That's from a sovereign, okay? Now, I'll tell you what I see that I don't like. I see Volpe, who was brought in to investigate the oil for bribes at the UN, and he covered up for all his UN cronies. I don't trust him. I don't trust anything that has to do with the UN. I don't think we should even be involved with the UN. We should maybe send a Boy Scout as an ambassador and only as an observer. I don't think we should have anything to do with the UN whatsoever. It would make a nice hotel. Now, let's take a look at Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is doing very well at these times. Their stock, I think, was around $84 a share today. But I don't like what I see. Goldman Sachs seems to be taking over the government. And I also remember that John Corzine, a flag burner and baby killer of record, okay, who used to be a senator and is now governor of the state of New Jersey, who spent $51 million to win the nomination for governor and the election, is also a Goldman Sachs graduate. And he made a lot of money at Goldman Sachs. I do not trust a Goldman Sachs. Hang in there, and we'll give you another hero song. Also on the vein of Kevin, Barry is Nathan Hale. I dedicate this tune to the Marine who wasn't even named last night at the Obama rally. They just pointed to him up in the audience, and they looked at him. So both he and a corporal named Anzac, who was fished out of the Euphrates River after being tortured, captured and tortured, okay, and whose body was sent home in a flag-draped coffin, both he and that Marine who sat in the balcony last night, this tune is dedicated to them.
In Mountjoy Jail, one Monday morning, high upon the gallows tree, Kevin Barry gave his young life for the cause. There's no set that morning. He proudly had his head up high. Just before he faced the hangman, in his dreary prison cell, British soldiers tortured sorry, just because he would not the name of his brave comrade, and other things they wish to know, turning former or will kill you, Kevin. Calmly standing to attention as he bids his last farewell to his broken-hearted mother, whose sad grief no one for the cause he proudly carries, this sad parting had to be. Then to death walked softly smiling, that old another martyr for old Ireland, another martyr for the crown, whose brutal laws may kill the Irish, but can keep their spirit down. Lads like Barry are no cowards. From the foe they will not fly. Lads like Barry will free Ireland.
Isn't it ironic that the party of death, who has divided us as a nation the most, now stands up and calls for unity after the damage has been done? What a farce. That's why I call them hypocrites. How are you doing? I just thought about, I was watching Glenn Beck tonight, and he had on a guest, and his guest was trying to get the law passed to make marijuana legal, and so I sent Glenn an email. I said, you didn't have an opposing point of view on. You should have had me on, because I believe in the death penalty for first-time marijuana users. I know that we're going to lose a lot of friends and relatives in the first 3 weeks, but after that, it's smooth sailing. And I also believe that when they use the glaucoma excuse, yes, we should have weed for glaucoma, but it should be in suppository form, and the insertion tool should be a shotgun. So anyway, I came home for lunch and I turned on Congress making believe they're doing the people's business, and who is cross-examining Bernanke, the banker, the hound of the Bankervilles, and is Nadler, you know, Roly-Poly and Nadler. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the United Kingdom once used to be called Great Britain, and they used to have a battle song called Rule Britannia, Britannia Rules the Waves. And it said, in the song it says, Britain never, never will be slaves. And now they're all slaves. That's why they're all over here. You notice that all of the talk show hosts have British accents? You notice all of the news reporters have British accents? Yeah, we now go to Podunk to give you the wheat futures report. Hello. I say, Governor. Yeah, we're in trouble, my friends. We're in real big trouble. Well, anyway, the United Kingdom, formerly Great Britain, and it's not so united anymore, has allowed a Sharia law to take precedence over British law in Muslim communities. So if you commit a crime in a Muslim community, you can expect a Sharia law penalty. And I said, oh my goodness, imagine if that happened here and they did it just in the House and the Senate. How many legless and armless senators we would see tomorrow? Could you see Barney Frank, the basket case, sitting next to Christopher Dudd, not being able to shake hands? Yeah. And beheadings and stonings. How about stonings? Stonings at the Minneapolis airport bathroom stall. That would take out a few senators. Yeah. And they wouldn't be touching legs anymore, because they'd be groping with their eyes. But let me go back to normal recordings, and let me give you a tune. One that will make your day. During the reign of Jimmy Carter, the loser, he lost the Panama Canal, he lost the American Embassy in Tehran, and he lost Afghanistan to the Russians. He tried to lose Israel, but they wouldn't let him. But during the reign of Jimmy Carter, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, Jimmy Carter boycotted the Olympics, and he held back on the sweat socks. And the New York bartenders did more than that. The New York bartenders boycotted vodka, and they took a Stoli and they poured it down the sink. And my mother, who always had a shot of scotch a day with an aspirin and lived to a ripe old age before the physicians killed her, used to say, oh my God, I hope we don't go to war with Scotland. So in her Celtic sense of humor, I'm going to play you There's Nothing So Dull and So Clear as to Stand in a Bar of a Pub with No Beer.
The face of the bum. The maid's gone all cranky and the coast packed it square. But a terrible place is a pub with no beer. The stockman rides up with his dry, dusty throat. He breasts up to the bar, pulls a wad from his coat. Put a smile on his face, quickly touched to a sneer. When the barman says suddenly, the pub got no beer. There's a dog on the veranda, for his master he waits. But the boss is inside, drinking wine with his mates. He hurries for cover, and he cringes in fear. But no place for a dog, round a pub with no beer. First time in his life has gone home cold sober to his darling wife. He walks in the kitchen, he says, "Your lady be dear." Then he breaks down and he tells her that the pub's got no beer. Oh, it's lonesome away from your kindred and all, where the campfire is light, where the wild eagles call. But there's nothing so lonesome, so dull or so drear, as to stand in the bar of a pub with no beer.
I made a comment that my mother never took any medication, only an aspirin and a shot of scotch. In her earlier years, a glass of port. And she lived to be 93. And when you get to be 93, the last place you want to be is in a hospital. And if you think it's bad now, wait until we have socialized medicine, because 93 will automatically expel you from a hospital. They are not going to save 93-year-olds. But there is a mental attitude in some medical circles that when you roll into a hospital and they ask your age, if you say 93, they're already crossing you off the living list. And you got to be careful. And like I told you, my mom never took any medication at all. She never, but she would give antibiotics to other people, and she used to mix them up. She used to save them and mix them up. But for herself, she never took anything but an aspirin and a shot of scotch a day. And when she went into the hospital, they over-medicated her with Coumadin. And you got to watch Coumadin. Coumadin causes you to bleed out. And you got to be very careful when you bring elderly people in, especially those who have a regimen of no medication. There's no tolerance there. But having said that, I'll give you another tune, and then we'll sail away. Oh, I started to tell you about Congressman Nadler, the Fatty Arbuckle. He's wearing a white carnation in his lapel all the time. You ever see him at the hearings? He was listening to Bernanke, and he cross-examined Bernanke. He wears the white carnation for... that's to support Palomino sex in lots of three. He's a flag burner and a baby killer, Congressman Nadler. But I'll bet you dollars to donuts that if a referendum came up to burn the flag of Israel, he would not be found. He would not be found, no matter how low you looked. Because he knows, if he ever signed a referendum, to burn the flag of Israel, calling it freedom of speech, he would suffer a Knish attack in about 2 seconds. That would be devastating. He would get a drive-by Knish attack. He couldn't do it, but he could vote to burn the American flag. Isn't that great? Well, anyway, he started out interrogating Bernanke today, and he opened up doing saying this. I was with my grandson, and we were reading, and I'll bet you his grandson's pro-life, and we were reading about the three little, three little pigs? This little piggy went to market, and this little piggy stayed home. And I interjected. I said, yeah, and the third little piggy voted to burn the flag. So Nadler is a dangerous man, but anybody New York sends to Washington can only hurt the rest of the country. Look what they do to us. Wait till the gloves come off on Obama and everybody stops playing Waltzing Matilda. And I got a quick message to Rupert Murdoch. You never should have apologized. You had nothing to apologize for. Be careful you don't step into the cowboy boots of Anus in the Morning, who called in Al Sharpton to be his sidekick, and instead got kicked to the side. Be careful, Rupert. Sometimes being proud is never having to say you're sorry. And there was no correlation between the monkey with the two bullets in him, the chimpanzee, and Barack Obama. The chimpanzee belonged to a white woman. And the chimpanzee was a wino. And the chimpanzee may be an illegal immigrant with a driver's license. And speaking of illegal immigrants, the immigrant who is responsible for the murder of Chandra Levy, allegedly, okay, and also committed two other crimes, is an illegal immigrant. But yet the communist media never mentioned it. It was only disclosed by, I think, a guy on Fox, the new guy on Fox, was very good. And Glenn Beck. He was the only one that mentioned that this guy was an illegal immigrant. They told you he was an immigrant, which gives you the impression that he's legal. But he's not. He's illegal. And wait till you see all the illegals that are going to come across that Mexican border when the shooting starts. And did you notice Eric Holder taking credit for the big drug bust in Mexico? He jumped right up on the stage to take credit for it. The thing that had probably was in the works for 2 years. But this is the guy who calls America a coward country. And I'm going to do some research about Eric Holder, and then I'm going to come back. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to do a Wikipedia search. I don't think he ever served this country. I just want to confirm it. I'm back. I know he never served in the military, but he likes to get his picture taken with an American flag in the background. His father did serve in the military. But unfortunately, his patriotism didn't rub off. The two things I got against Eric Holder is, one, he brought the Mark Rich pardon to his boss, who actually brought it to him first, I'm sure. And in order to do that, you got to sell your soul to the devil. And the other one was the pardon of the FALN terrorists who tried to assassinate President Truman, the last real Democrat. So, as far as I'm concerned, Holder is an errand boy for grocery clerks. And when you call your country a nation of cowards, that's the same as saying, "I'm the first time in my life I'm proud to be an American." If you got to wait until you're in your 30s to say you're proud to be an American, you've been going to the wrong schools. Oh, and he is a Columbia graduate, so that makes him half a communist.
When boyhood's fire was in my blood, I read of ancient freemen, of Greece and Rome, who bravely stood, 300 men and freemen. And then I prayed I yet might see our fetters rent in twain, and Ireland long a province be, and nation once again. this woe that hope has shone a far light. Nor could love's bright a summer glow outshine that solemn starlight. It seemed to watch above my head in forum, field, and saying its angel voice sang round my bed, a nation once again, a nation once again, a nation once again. And Ireland loved a province be, a nation once again. It whispered to the freedom mark and service high and holy would be profaned by feelings dark and passion vain or lowly. From freedom comes from God's right hand and needs a godly train, and righteous men must make our land a nation once again, a nation once again, a nation once again. And Ireland long a province be, a nation once again. So as I grew from boy to man, I bent me to that bidding. The spirit of each selfish clan would grow a passion bidding. For thus I hope someday to wait. Oh, can such hope be vain when my dear country shall be made a nation once again, a nation once again, a nation once again. And Ireland long a province be, a nation once again, a nation once again, a nation once again. And Ireland long a province be, a nation once again.
That lady that went to jury duty today was surrounded by Obama supporters, and one was a teacher, and she said, at least now our reputation in the world, we can regain the respect of the world. And when I heard that, my only question was, which part of the world? The world that gave up 6 million Jews to appease Adolf Hitler? Name one country that stood up for the Jewish people and told Hitler to go scratch, and said, we're not going to let you take German Jews because they're Germans first. We're not going to let you take Romanian Jews because they're Romanians first. We're not going to let you take Italian Jews because they're Italians first. We're not going to let you take French Jews because they're French first. None of them, not one country, stood up and protected their people, their citizens. And you're worried about their opinion of us? You got to be kidding. Let me give a tribute to Donald Rumsfeld. We got 10 minutes left.
You get a chance, buy the book. And if you can't afford the book, listen to the show. It's free. My topic tonight is Donald Rumsfeld. This guy took a lot of heat. He never fought back. He continued to keep his head down and do the job. And he was, I feel, a thrown overboard to feed to give us Barabbas crowd. My point being that if a pitcher lasts 7 innings and is relieved, he still gets credit for the game. And General Petraeus has done a wonderful job, but the day that General Petraeus went in wasn't the day that magic happened. The success in Iraq is due to everybody who was in there from day one who contributed. And Donald Rumsfeld spent more time working on winning the war than anybody else in the House, in the Senate, and in the Pentagon. Maybe there's a couple of guys in the Pentagon, a couple of privates. But I just want to give you a little background on Rumsfeld, because this is the only guy that was tried and convicted in the press, and nobody ever listed the indictment charges. If you ask you ask 100 Democrats today what was he guilty of and where were his mistakes, they can't tell you. They don't know, because they only listen to the party line. And the party line was get everybody that's on Bush's team. And they were very successful. And George let it happen. And that's George's legacy, that he allowed the Democrats to eat his appointees. And if George doesn't get bin Laden before he leaves office, his legacy and his library will not be that great. His only claim to fame is two Supreme Court judges. The economy, the tax cut probably helped most likely helped the economy. But the economy took care of itself as it always does, and no politician can really claim success for the economy. And definitely not President Pinocchio Pants, because all he did was make money on the economy by sending bag men to Wall Street. And we won't get into that, because that's a civil trial that's due to come up in the future. And when he tries to explain how he made $60 million as a government employee. And now it's $160 million, thanks to a commission from the Uraniums. So let me tell you about my hero. And he's in my book as a hero, Donald Rumsfeld. And I got to tell you something. I never kick a man when he's down, because most of the time they get up and finish you off. So, Donald Rumsfeld was born on the 9th of July, 1932. This is what you can find this on the internet. His birthplace was Evanston, Illinois. And here's how they list it on the internet and in his portfolio. His gender is male. His religion is Protestant. His race is white. His sexual orientation, yeah, now they list their sexual orientations. His straight, his occupation is government, politician, business, and his party affiliation is Republican. His nationality is the United States, and his executive summary is U.S. Secretary of Defense, 2001 to 2006. His military service, he was a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy from 54 to 57. He was both the youngest and oldest Secretary of Defense in history. He was the youngest when at age 43 he took charge of the Pentagon under President Gerald Ford in 1975, appointed to the same post by President George W. Bush more than 25 years later. He became the first Secretary of Defense in his 70s. He was also a congressman from Illinois in the 60s and all-Navy wrestling champion during his military years. Between his two stints at the Pentagon, he was chief executive of pharmaceutical giant G.D. Searle and Company from 1976 to 1985. He sold off several Searle subsidiaries, reduced the payroll by more than half, and made Fortune's list of the 10 toughest bosses in America. Critics charge that he used his Washington connections to rush approval of Searle's aspartame NutraSweet, which by the time Rumsfeld left accounted for more than half of Searle's profits. So he's into big sweeteners. He's into big sweeteners. He's one of those American entrepreneurs. He's a capitalist. He helped an American company grow. Isn't that great? He later served as CEO at General Instrument Corporation, a high-tech manufacturer that was eventually bought out by Motorola. Even while in the private sector, though, Rumsfeld remained a deep inside advisor for Republican administrations and high-level office holders and candidates. He visited Saddam Hussein's Iraq in 1983 and 1984 as a special envoy representing President Reagan. Shortly after the infamous incident when Hussein gassed the Kurds, when these visits became newsworthy decades later, Rumsfeld said he had cautioned Saddam to stop using chemical weapons. Transcripts of the meetings, however, include no mention of this topic. During his longtime status as a stalwart politician, Rumsfeld made campaign contributions to at least two Democratic candidates for office, Bill Bradley and John Glenn. He also led a commission in the 1990s at President Clinton's request to determine whether the National Missile Defense, known as Star Wars, was feasible, and they decided it was. As Secretary of Defense in the Bush administration, Rumsfeld oversaw two wars against tiny nations, which were essentially unable to mount any serious defense. He is 1-for-2. Rumsfeld's plans were effective in toppling Afghanistan quickly with few American casualties and installing a U.S.-friendly government there. So he has to be given credit for Afghanistan, which was a very colossal victory. But in Iraq, the reasons Rumsfeld cited for attacking have been disproved, so it remains unclear what vital American interests U.S. soldiers are fighting for. And while, let me tell you why U.S. soldiers are in Iraq are fighting. They're fighting to keep Al-Qaeda from getting on the airline to come to New York one more time. Wherever there's Al-Qaeda, there has to be 911 New Yorkers fighting back. And while Rumsfeld's strategy allowed U.S. forces to quickly take nominal control of the land, no one has yet found a way to calm the increasingly angry natives who want the Americans to leave their country. That is not true. Right now, they know that when the Americans leave, many will die. And they would rather have an American standing on the corner than one of their own standing on the corner. So don't buy this crap, all right? And I don't know who put this together, but you can see it's a hit piece. In press conferences, the flow of dead and injured Americans and Iraqis continues. So this is a propaganda hit piece under the guise of being fair and impartial, which goes on all day in the media. In press conferences, Rumsfeld enjoyed mocking reporters whose questions he deemed silly. And he was right. The only thing he should have done that I would have done is I would have brought my skeet gun to the conference, and I would have shot anybody who asked a stupid question, and that would have eliminated at least the first two rows in 5 minutes. In press conferences, Rumsfeld enjoyed mocking reporters, and that's a good thing. Often, though, his own answers were so meandering and muddled, it seemed Rumsfeld might be on medication. What a cheap shot. This is really a terrible hit piece, entering senility or simply avoiding the questions. I don't know who put this piece together. I should have gotten the name of who the communist author was. But I'm reading it anyway, okay? And some pundits jokingly recited this transcript of Rumsfeld's answers as goofy poetry. There was no more goofy poet than the Secretary of Defense appointed by the Clintons named Cohen, who was a duped Republican, a repuppy, and he read his poems to NATO. And he then flew to Hollywood and decorated Jack Valenti, the sweetheart of the Communist Party of North America, formerly known as the Democrat Party. He was in the Pentagon on September 11th and helped load the wounded onto stretchers. So, hey, how's that, huh? When the Abu Ghraib torture scandal was making headlines, the Abu Ghraib torture scandal, do you know what torture is? Do you have any idea? Have you ever seen any of the Iraqi rape rooms? Have you ever seen nice Makita drills that they use on eyeballs and kneecaps? Yeah. Tell me about it. Tell me what's torture. Torture is what? A guy cowering in the corner, being barked at by a bowsy wowsy? A guy made to stand on a chair with a poncho on his head? Is that torture? With make-believe wires? Is it torture to have which look like the DNC convention class photo? Everybody mooning the camera? That's torture? A guy with panties on his head is torture? You know what torture is? Torture is a corporal named Anzac being fished out of the Euphrates River. And his body wasn't shown because they didn't want to break his mother's heart and drive people to suicide. That's torture.
Folks, that's it for tonight. I just wanted to give you a little update on the Rumsfeld Marshal. And he never got his... we never got to hear his side of the story. But I'm sure one day we will, and of course it'll be water under the bridge and nobody will care. Also, I don't like the Gates, the new secretary, and I see tonight that he went along with Obama to allow the press to take pictures of the bodies returning from combat zones. I guess the next move will be to open the coffin lids and let vultures sit on the rails. Yeah, this is your press at work. They can't wait. Now we're on Obama's watch, the Afghan watch. Now as the bodies come back from Afghanistan, let's see what the press does. Let's see if they blame Obama for the combat losses. Let's see if how many rugs are going to get swept under. Have a nice night. I'll talk to you.